Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. State lawmakers returned to Raleigh earlier this month to negotiate and approve a pair of bills intended to provide some relief to state residents coping with the coronavirus pandemic. And while the legislation received overwhelming bipartisan support and won swift approval from Governor Cooper, it also left a lot of key issues unaddressed. Earlier this week, I got a chance to catch up with State Senator Jay Chaudhry of Wake County to get his assessment of the legislation. Chaudhry says that while he supported the package and its allocation of more than $1.5 billion in federal funds, there remains a lot of work to do, from fixing North Carolina's stingiest in the country unemployment insurance system to closing the state's health insurance coverage gap to preparing for a fall election in which more voters than ever will need to vote by mail. Well, Senator Jay Chaudhry, welcome back to News and Views. Good to have you back with us.
Great to be with you, Rob.
These are extraordinary times. How are you coping? How's your family? How has this pandemic affected you and your work?
You know, we're coping. We're incredibly blessed that we still have our jobs. And like a lot of parents, my wife and I are running a diner, feeding our children, homeschooling them in the morning, and then carrying on with our activities in the afternoon and in the evenings. I think if anything, from spending time trying to teach our children, Rob, what I would tell you is I think that any parent that has gone through this will have a whole new level of respect for our teachers and what they do in their profession and trying to educate our children.
What's your take on where things stand? What's your take on how we're coping with this, how we should be approaching the lifting of these rules we've established for coping with the pandemic? Everybody has thoughts on that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'd say a couple of things. I think number one, I was impressed that Congress came together to provide the federal relief package, mm-hmm. and in turn, the General Assembly last Saturday unanimously passed a bill that in turn provided relief to local governments, to our school systems, to our small businesses, to try to get us through the pandemic. And so I think that was unprecedented work across the aisle to see that happen. I think at the same time, I am concerned. I mean, I am gravely concerned about the lack of testing, the lack of testing kits that we have. And from my perspective, unless we are able to get more testing kits and we're able to execute Governor Cooper's strategy of testing, tracing, and trending, I am worried that we're not going to ultimately be able to reopen the economy in a full capacity at the rate that we need to.
So the General Assembly, as you alluded to, returned to Raleigh for what was supposed to be the short session of the General Assembly. It's taken on a sort of different feel, a very different feel. What was your initial impression of how things worked in the legislative building? It was essentially locked down there as well. The general public and lobbyists not able really to come into the building. Y'all weren't even meeting in person for the most part. What was your initial assessment of how that worked?
I think the whole experience was surreal. I think to the extent that the committee meetings were transparent, there were efforts to do so. I mean, I will say that I thought that the House did a better job in its ability to hold committee meetings compared to the Senate. But, you know, given the circumstances, I thought we fared okay. You know, I think it's unfortunate that that the general public could not enter into the building. May have not been as unfortunate for the lobbyists to enter into the building. But all kidding aside, I think it was the right approach in our efforts to try to practice social distancing and keeping folks safe. I mean, we really did not spend much time at all in the Senate. The Senate seats were separated by more than 6 feet in order to make sure that we were still practicing social distancing. And a lot of members, obviously all Democrats, were also wearing masks. So I think we were making every effort to protect our health as well.
Despite those weird circumstances, you came forth, as you alluded to, with something pretty rare these days in North Carolina, a piece of consensus legislation that was unanimous, that was then signed by the governor very quickly. What's your initial take, and how would you summarize this relief legislation that the legislature approved?
Yeah, I would summarize it by saying this. I think that the $1.5 billion relief package was a good start. I mean, it does important things in providing support to our local governments, to our small businesses, to our schools. It provides medical supplies and personal protective equipment to our frontline workers in the healthcare sector. But at the same time, I mean, there are clear shortfalls that I fully would expect our General Assembly to address going forward, coming back next week. And you know, those are areas such as the fact that we did not increase our unemployment benefits by $50. That was a provision that was in the Senate package and not in the House package, and the House prevailed. We are not fully covering testing under Medicaid. I am very concerned about our small businesses, particularly our restaurant industry. We had a provision to provide cocktails to go that would inject some cash that these restaurants desperately need. And then finally, we still have not carried out the election reforms that need to be done to get ready in the event the pandemic resurges in the fall.
It was striking that these two issues, unemployment insurance and Medicaid expansion, which have been, you know, topics that the General Assembly has discussed for a long time, that the Senate actually came forth with a surprisingly progressive proposal on at least some modest improvements to unemployment insurance. And then likewise, the House took some steps on Medicaid, you know, at least an incremental increase for folks who can't afford health insurance. But somehow they got left out of the final package that was negotiated. I take it that was a negotiation in which Democratic leaders probably didn't play much of a role.
That's correct. I mean, the negotiations continued between the corner offices, between the Republican leadership there. I think the Democrats were consulted, but certainly we were not at the table.
What happens now? What do we need to do, even just in terms of how the session's going to proceed? How often will you be in session in Raleigh? How long will it go on? Do you have any ideas about how that will work, and then what might be on the table for discussion when you do return in the coming days?
You know, I don't have a real sense for how long we will be back in this session. My sense is I still think there will be some priority to try to get the work done in a relatively short time period. I think that we will continue to probably see a similar process in which a lot of meetings are carried on online through WebEx and Zoom, with floor votes being taken by members over a long period of time in order to continue to practice social distancing. And certainly, I think as we look at the agenda for this coming session, we will look at a part two to the federal relief package dollars that need to be allocated. And my sense is I think we will probably touch upon some issues that are outside of COVID-19. But Rob, you know, it's really any issue that we talk about, ultimately, you can tie back to the virus. And fully expanding Medicaid, for example, is just one of those examples.
Let's talk a little bit more about elections. You alluded to the fact that it's coming up just a few months, and we've seen the chaos that sort of took place in the primary in Wisconsin. Ohio's had a lot of problems. What are your thoughts on what we need to do to get ready for the November election and assure that our democracy is still functioning in this unprecedented time?
Just as the virus has changed the way that we eat, pray, and live, it will also change the way that we vote. And we want to make sure that we don't experience what happened in Wisconsin. And we want to make sure that no voter is put in a position to have to choose between their health and their voting rights. And so I think it is critically important that we do a number of things to make sure that we keep our polling places open and safe, because we still have a long tradition and a rich tradition of people going to polling places. But at the same time, given the projection of participation rates that we're going to see from voters that want to vote from home, it's critically important that we expand vote by mail options as well.
Do you have any ideas on how we go about that? I mean, the reality is that maybe 10% of people vote by mail now, and we're looking at half the people perhaps voting by mail come November. It's an extraordinary shift in how we vote, and we're going to need to make some changes to make ballots accessible to people. There's been proposals to perhaps loosen some of the rules when it comes to witnessing ballots. And then on the other side, people are pushing back and saying, oh, this invites voter fraud. I know the Board of Elections has put forth a series of recommendations that they say would get us closer to where we need to be. Are the recommendations from the board the kinds of things you think the legislature needs to look at?
I do think that what the State Board of Elections recommendations have set forth are the recommendations and the type of legislative changes that we ought to consider. Let me just share with you a few examples. Number one, in order to make sure that we keep our polling places open and safe, it'll be critically important that the General Assembly allocate close to $2 million to make sure that we draw down federal matching funds that were part of the federal relief package that was passed earlier this year. Those dollars can be used to purchase cleaning equipment, single-use pens, cotton swabs that can be used to vote for touch screens. That'll be critically important. But in addition, we need to make sure that we make vote by mail easier for our voters. And as you mentioned, that means that we need to look at loosening the requirements for witnesses when somebody casts an absentee ballot. Right now, there are two witness requirements that are needed. We believe that that should come down to one. If you think about an elderly voter who is at home by his or herself, it's very difficult for them to be able to obtain two witnesses without violating any kind of social distancing guidelines or measures. And so we need to look at changing that. In addition, I think we need to make sure that we look at trying to loosen poll worker requirements to make sure that poll workers come from the county and not necessarily from the voting precinct, because many of our poll workers today are elderly. They're in the vulnerable population where they may not feel comfortable staffing the polling sites. And so it'll be critically important that we bring more poll workers to these polling sites. And lastly, I would say, is I think there's a real need for us to include prepaid postage for absentee ballots so that we make that, again, an easier process for people to vote by home.
There's another idea that's been suggested. It may be a little more of a reach, but this idea of making Election Day a holiday. In a lot of places it is. The idea that we just make it a state holiday, obviously not everybody would get the day off, but it might well make things easier for people to participate. Do you think that's something that could ever occur in our state?
Look, I love that idea. That was also an idea that was recommended by the State Board of Election. It's an idea that I'm personally very interested in seeing us carrying through. And I think it's an idea that makes sense, given, I think, the challenges that we're going to face on Election Day if the virus is still with us. You know, that being said, I'm not sure if my friends on the other side of the aisle have an interest in seeing a state holiday for an Election Day. But that being said, you know, I certainly would like to see us do the other things that we talked about during this conversation, making sure that we have the federal matching funds in place, making sure that we go from two witness requirements to one witness requirement, making sure that we have poll workers that are ready to staff the polls, and making sure that we have pre-postage paid for people's absentee ballots so that we can have that robust democracy that we need when we go into the November election.
And I take you feel some sense of optimism that you might actually have a meeting of the minds between the two parties before this spring, summer, short session is over.
I am an optimistic person by nature. I also know that we are running out of time. I mean, the elections are less than 6 months away. I think that pushing for a robust democratic process really is a bipartisan issue, and there's no reason that we can't get this done before the November elections.
Well, Senator Jay Chaudhry, we wish you all the best with those efforts there and all the other fine work you're doing at the General Assembly for us. Thanks so much for your service to our state, and hang in there and stay safe, and we'll talk again soon, I hope.
You too, Rob, and stay safe and be well.
Coming up next, part one of a special two-part conversation with North Carolina Association of Educators President Mark Jewell. Stay with us.